Today, I'm personally speaking, I am having someone who is for sure the oldest guest we've ever had. Her name is Sister Jean. She's written a great new book called Wake Up with Purpose. She's an amazing woman, a great religious of the Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Please stay with us. Hello and welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Jim Lasanti. Delighted that Sister Jean Dolores Schmidt joins me now. Sister Jean's known to millions simply as Sister Jean, the Loyola Chicago matriarch and college basketball icon who celebrated her 103rd birthday this past August. Sister Jean and her collaborator, best-selling author, sports writer, and broadcaster Seth Davis worked together to capture the life lessons she learned in her century-long life. Her new memoir is entitled Wake Up with Purpose. The subtitle is What I Learned in My First 100 Years. Sister Jean is a religious sister of the Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary. She entered religious life at 18 to become a school teacher. Fame came to Sister Jean as chaplain to the Loyola University Ramblers during the men's basketball team's improbable 2018 run to the NCAA Final Four. Sister Jean is here with us today to tell us about her life, her faith, her purpose, and how finding one's purpose can lead to a life of joy and real fulfillment. So glad to welcome now to Personally Speaking, Sister Jean. Sister Jean, we welcome you, and for our listeners and our watchers around the world, we're talking today about Sister Jean's book, which is Wake Up with Purpose, the important subtitle, What I've Learned in My First 100 Years. First, Sister, let me tell you, at 103, down the hall in my rectory right now is my mom, who lives with me, who is 102. Both of you were born when Woodrow Wilson was president, and around the same time World War I ended, which was called the War to End All Wars. Okay, in that 102, 103 years since, more wars, more depression, more sadness, more genocide, more human suffering. Here's my question at 103. When you look at the span of your life, do you end up with hope that humanity can ever do right by one another?
I want everything to be peaceful, of course, like
yes,
millions of people do. But how we're going to reach that is only, to me, is to talk to each other and try to settle problems in a peaceful way. Loud voices don't get any place.
Right.
And it disturbs me when I hear about protesters who don't think through the entire problem and just want to be shouting on the street.
Yeah. So you're a big fan of dialoguing with one another, trying to see other people's point of view, which is so sadly lacking, not just in America, but around the world. Now, Sister, I got to tell you, I was so thrilled when I was reading the book and found out that you were Sister of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary. The BVMs taught me in grammar school at St. Thomas the Apostle in West Hempstead, and I still pray every day for Helen Garvey, who taught me, and especially for Sister Mary Angela Buza, who was my principal and a hero of mine. Great community, wonderful women, and that you're part of that family just thrills the heck out of me. They really made a difference in my life. But let me ask you, the charism of the BVMs, why did they attract you many years ago?
Well, when I was in third grade, I thought I wanted to be a sister. Oh, I wanted to be a teacher all the time. When I say all the time, in the neighborhood when we played school, I always decided I would be the teacher.
Okay.
So that, and I had two aunts who taught in the public schools in San Francisco. My mother had that; they were my dad's sisters. He also had a sister who was a Holy Family sister, but she taught just catechism. I wasn't interested in doing just that.
Right.
Then my mom had a sister and a niece in the school Sisters of Notre Dame. So I knew something about, you know, what sisters were, very little, but something about sisters. So this third grade teacher told us that we we're not too young to be thinking about what we wanted to do. So I thought, well, she became a sister and a teacher. I could do that too. So every day I prayed to God and said, you know, God, please tell me that what to do, but say that I'm to be a BVM sister. So I was trying to push God my way instead of having God push me his way. But I guess we hit it off mutually. I never changed my mind. Talked about it a lot when I was young, like, you know, 8, 9, 10. But then you begin to hold it in because you want to just be a part of the class instead of having them say, a sister, why do you want to be a sister? So, you know, you didn't want to miss the parties. You didn't want to miss anything like that until I was a senior in high school. And then I told one of the sisters that I was going to Dubuque to be a sister. And she said, oh, did you write and ask them? I said, ask them. I was just going to go. I said, you're always saying you're short of sisters. She said, well, that's not the way we do it. So let me tell you what to do. So she did. And I've been a BVM all that time.
It's a great community. We'll talk some more about the BVMs in a little bit. But, you know, in the book, Waking Up with Purpose, you know, you talk about the impact your parents had on you and how they basically taught you. You say this throughout the book about accepting people, loving people, no matter where they come from, who they are. That was a wonderful thing to say about the impact your parents had on you. But when you look at all the life lessons that your parents gave you, what did they do right in raising you and building the family that they did?
Well, I think, first of all, they had a great family spirit.
Mm-hmm.
We discussed things openly in the family, except that we could never talk about school at the table during dinner. That was time for us just to share good things.
Mm-hmm.
After dinner, it was like holding court because my brothers were, you know, boys. And they had, you know, things to do in the playground that I never would participate in. But the boys were separated from the girls anyhow in the playground and with a big fence between the two of us. And that was okay too. But I think my mom and dad, my dad often said that he didn't know much about marriage and he didn't know much about kids. He told us later on, you know, he said, your mom and I just kind of played it by ear and treated people the way we wanted to be treated ourselves.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, we're ahead of themselves then. But they always talked over, we always talked over things that we wanted to do. First of all, with my mother. And then she would say, well, maybe you better ask your dad. So mm-hmm. we'd go to dad. Yeah, what do you think about this? Well, he said, you know, your mother knows more about that. She'll have to give the answer. But I never heard them argue in my whole life. And I thought that was a real blessing.
Yeah.
Some kids talked about how their parents were fighting all the time. And I thought, we don't even know what that is in our house.
Isn't that great? So they were peaceful people. And
they were peaceful people. And I came from good grandmothers and good grandfathers and good aunts and uncles. And so they were all very good example. My dad's mother, even though she bore the name Schmidt, her maiden name was Fogarty.
Oh, okay.
Good Irish Kate Fogarty she was. And in those days, that was very unusual that an Irish girl would marry a Lutheran from Bavaria. But she took care of it, and she went to Mass every day. If there was a funeral, my grandmother went to the funeral. Why do you go to so many funerals, Grandma? Well, sometimes they don't have many people there, so I think I should go. So sometimes she went to two Masses a day.
Wow.
And, you know, she was a good lady. She used to love to visit the German church, too, St. Boniface in San Francisco. And sometimes they would have processions, like for the Feast of St. Anthony, and everybody had a St. Anthony lily and walked around the church. And so she would always take me. I loved to go because we didn't have to practice. We just got out of the pews and walked. At school, we had to practice for Holy Thursday, 40 hours devotion, all that. It took a lot of time to practice. But this way, we just walked around the church and prayed and sang.
Sister Jean talks about the fact that her parents created a climate of peacefulness in the home, didn't argue, didn't fight, and that very much influenced her. Now, this might shock people, but it shouldn't. I remember Sister Mary Angela Buser saying that when we look back on 40, 50 years ago, you know, we were a convent of 25 and 30 sisters, and, you know, not everyone always got along. When you were in convent situations where there might have been personal conflict, what did that upbringing of being a peaceful person, living the golden rule, how did that impact on how well you lived in a religious community?
Well, I lived the same way. I wasn't arguing with people. We tried to get things in order so that things would move smoothly. There were some situations that needed attention, but I have to say that I had excellent principals and superiors. And in those days, the principal was the superior as well. I couldn't have had better.
Yeah.
I got myself in trouble. And when my first year, I was barely there, and it was time to have this big show at St. Vincent's in Chicago. And I didn't even know the song because it was God Bless America. And we were supposed to sing the song and do a little, you know, pantomime to it and everything. And I said, I don't know that song. I have to learn it. All the fifth graders know it already. And so the night of the program, I promised them that if they did well, I would give them a treat the next day. I had no idea where I'd get the treat. So I went to the principal and I said, Sister Idas, I made a big mistake. I said, I promised my class and the other fifth grade boys, because I was in charge of the boys, the other fifth grade sister was in charge of the girls. And I said, I told them I'd give them a treat and I don't know where I'm going to get it. She said, well, you know what? We sell candy in the office. Did you know that? Yes, I do, sister. But she said, you go in there and you ask Sister Maria Ignata to give you sufficient candy for all those boys and girls, because the girls have to have it too. I thought that was so much. She rescued me that way.
Yes. Yeah. It's great to have superiors and principals like that. Now, for those who don't know, Sister Jean has worked in many schools and many educational situations and has always been involved in promoting and working with sports programs. So what she does at Loyola is not new. She's done this throughout her whole religious life. Why do I mention that? Because, Sister, back a long, long time ago, when you began religious life, I'm going to imagine that most teams in most of those schools were filled with white players. And then over the course of your career, your life, your vocation, you've seen all the teams become integrated and in many cases predominantly are made up of people who are not white. I'm just wondering, this nice white girl from the Midwest, how did she deal with the changes in culture that a blended people? So we weren't all about being white all the time, but we came to welcome and work with people of other races and cultures. How well were you prepared to do that? And how well did you do it?
Well, you know, I don't know about really being formally prepared because, first of all, I did not grow up with any children of color,
wow,
except the Japanese and Chinese. And
right,
we had such big groups of those wonderful Asian people living in San Francisco, with Chinatown as the biggest Chinatown outside of China.
Right.
So they were the people I knew that were different. My one aunt in the public school taught first grade. She had one black girl in her room, and she thought it would be very important for me to meet that girl. So she asked the girl's mother if she could come to dinner with my aunt and me. And her mother was delighted. So I met Helen, who's the only Black girl in my elementary school that the time that I met. I didn't have anybody in high school either. So, as you say, I worked with teams from the two schools, St. Charles and North Hollywood, St. Brendan's in LA, and we didn't have any Black children in school at all. And so when I came to Chicago to Mundelein College, that's when my first encounter with Black students. And I kept what I learned. You don't think about what color people are. You think of how good they are or if they fit where they belong. And that I put that on toward faculty, staff. You don't hire just because you need a certain percentage of people. You hire the people because they know how to do the job.
Right.
And I've witnessed that at Mundelein, and I've witnessed it at Loyola.
Mm-hmm.
The men's basketball team, my greatest lesson is from the team of 1963, when we actually, the men from Loyola, changed the game. And that's what it's called, a game of change. And so if you know about that, there's a wonderful picture where the Black man from Loyola, Jerry Harkness, and the white man from Mississippi State are shaking hands. See that Black hand and arm and that white hand and arm shaking each other. I just get emotional all the time. Mm-hmm. I did see the game. I saw the game on TV in a little 11-inch TV. It was delayed. So, and no cell phones those days for anybody to call us and say, oh, we won, we won. We didn't know we won. And we were watching it, and it was over at midnight. And the Loyola students at that time were all men. The Mundelein students were all women. So pretty soon we heard a lot of noise out on Sheridan Road. And there, sure enough, it was Loyola students came over to Mundelein and got all the girls out of the residence hall. They all walked down the white line of Sheridan Road saying, we won, we won, we won. And that was the first time that, you know, so many Blacks had been on the court. And George Ireland wasn't going to pay any attention to anybody who said you can't have that many. He just did it. And so it's a great thing. And there is a wonderful documentary out on it now that we have. And it's helping people to bring about the reconciliation that we should have and to bring about peace. And when it comes to all of this chit-chat that we start with, we do a disservice to each other if we have the Blacks in one group and the whites in another group. Both groups have to sit down together and talk and be honest and say, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. And we're working very hard at that.
That's wonderful. Sister Jean's our guest. Wake Up With Purpose is her book that she's put together at the ripe young age of 103. Sister, I got to ask you, because I was, as I mentioned, taught by the Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the BVMs. I watched as they went through all the transitions, especially after the Second Vatican Council, in terms of their habit. You know, they used to have a habit that made them look like spaceships, and then they went to a modified habit, and finally, in most cases, gave up the habit. What went into your own decision to move from the habit to a freer expression of who you are?
Well, the Pope said we should be more like our mother foundress.
Mm-hmm.
And so our mother foundress never wore short skirts. She had just long skirt, and she dressed as the women of her time. She never did wear the habit, even though the habit was, one of the habits was designed while she was still alive. She just, those five women just fell right into the idea that they were the founders and they were staying the way they were. So the same thought came when we changed from a habit to contemporary clothes. We did not say, you have to do this. We said, we would like everyone to do this. But if you don't feel comfortable, you don't have to do it. Some of our sisters were so old at that time that they had never worn a short skirt. So that was like a double request we were asking of them. But eventually, everybody was out of the habit. We especially told the people who were going to our mother house to retire that it would be hygienically better to have the contemporary clothes, much easier for the workers there. And our heart always goes out when people say workers to our sisters. So they wanted to respect what the workers were doing to make it easier for them at the mother house. And as I say, we all fell into it then. And I think, you know, it was difficult for some people to do it. I was ready to do it because what the Holy Father wanted us to do. I was ready to do it earlier than I did. And I asked the Mother General, and at that time I was living with 150 scholastics. That was, those young women were studying at Mundelein to get their degree, and then they would go out to teach. And Mother Consolatrice said to me, oh, she said, Sister, if you change, the whole house will want to change overnight. So I'm going to ask you to wait. So I waited. And when the word came out that we'd all do it, those 150 young women were sewing and cutting and making blouses and making jackets and making skirts and everything. And they just move right along very fast. Now, I'm not saying all of that whole change was good. Many people left not only our community, but other communities because we weren't moving fast enough, and others were leaving because we weren't moving fast enough.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, you know, trying to please everybody, which never happens.
Well, Sister Junior, that's a perfect segue. You have a wonderful perspective because you've been living this long and wonderful life. A whole lot of people don't even know what the Vatican Council meant. You've lived through what the church was before the council and after. When it was going on, as a religious woman, what did you make of the whole council thing? Did you look at it as something with great joy and anticipation? Was it something frightening? Who knows what'll come out of this council? What was it like to live and be an active part of the church at a time when the Second Vatican Council was actually happening?
Well, we changed pretty quickly. For example, with the Mass, we were ready to go.
Yeah.
And I remember that I was at St. Brendan's at that time. I was the principal there. And our pastor, Monsignor Fogarty, was going to jump in right away. So he had printed cards made for all the changes in the church and saying the Mass in English. And we thought that was wonderful. So that Sunday, all the Masses were in English. And we said the prayers accordingly. And then he called me and he said, Sister, we can't do that next Sunday. Why? I said, the children love it, you know. And he said, somebody reported me to the cardinal. reporter, what, where does the Pope fit in? I said. And he said, well, this is disturbing this lady. And she said that she didn't want the Mass in English, but she wanted the Mass in the language that Jesus spoke. Well, Jesus didn't speak Latin, I don't think. He had enough other things to do.
Now, before we close, Sister Jean, I wanted to ask you something. The experience of life and death. I kid my mom sometimes. She lost my dad in 2005, and I say to her, you know, do you miss him? Oh, I miss him terribly. Do you love him? Oh, I love your father so much. Do you miss him and love him enough that you want to be with him? And she says, no, I like life. I mention that to you because at 103, I got to ask yourself, you believe in the life to come. I know you do. But do you want to stay around or are you looking to go home?
Well, I still think I have work to do.
Yeah.
I think God is asking me to, you know, do some work. And my religious superiors realize that I like it at Loyola, that when I talk about basketball or whatever and do these interviews, I always recognize the fact that I'm a Sister of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary and that I'm a member of the Loyola community. And so my community says that's fine. I'm healthy.
Yeah, so, thank God, yeah.
And I used to say to Father Garanzini, if you find me slipping mentally, just say the word Dubuque to me and I'll know.
It's good to be open to that kind of suggestion.
And he laughed the same way you did.
Because he knows that mind of yours is still sharp. Sister Jean has been our guest. Her book, as you can see, is Wake Up with Purpose, and she does every day. Amazing woman, amazing religious. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I've had the privilege of being formed and shaped in my early life by Sisters of Charity, the Blessed Virgin Mary. And it's so great to see many years later, a 103-year-old member of the community still doing God's work and bringing love and understanding and people together. Sister Jean, you're an inspiration and a sign of hope to all of us. Thank you for your life, your ministry, and please keep on keeping on. We need you.
Thank you so much, Father Jim.
You take care, my friend. Bye-bye now. As we end today's program, I want to thank you all for being with us. If you need to contact me, you can reach me at personallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook, Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Asante. We're also now on Instagram at Personally Speaking Podcast. I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer, Personally Speaking. Our producer is Lisa Jandovitz. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you again next time on Personally Speaking.